and welcome to Chapter Chat. I'm Christine.
And I'm Natasha from Those Forking Fangirls.
From Those Forking Fangirls. And we are going to be doing a read-along here for A Court of Thorns and Roses by Miss Sarah J. Maas. We have actually been recording this week to week for the past year at the end of all of our shows. Mm-hmm. But we want to make it more accessible to anyone who's just starting their reread or anyone that couldn't read it at the time because they weren't reading it and now they are. And so we're releasing it in chunks every Thursday. Mm-hmm. From now on, there will be how many parts, Natasha?
So there's four parts. The first part has chapters 1 through 13. The second part, which has chapters 14 through 25. Part 3 has chapters 26 through 35. And part 4 has chapters 36 through 46. So about 10 chapters or more.
Yeah, I mean, that's this first episode is 1 through 13, you said?
Yes.
Yes. We hope you enjoy that. We had a lot of fun breaking down the ins and outs of every chapter. Mm-hmm. And then we've also been reading Akamath after that. We're about halfway through Akamath right now, and we're pausing our read-along so that we can release those chapters week to week as well. So once those four parts of ACOTAR are released, we will start releasing the chunks of Akamath. And they'll be slightly smaller. They'll be in like 40 minutes to an hour chunks, and those are usually like four chapters. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll pick that up releasing like weekly once we're all caught up and you're all caught up with the episodes of Chapter Chat. We're very excited to have it accessible.
Yeah.
To anyone who wants to listen, because we've gotten requests, right?
Yeah, we have gotten requests. This is something we talked about too, like early on, having this as just something separate. Either it was going to be a reread or a rewatch type of thing. So now we will have available for everyone. One outside of the main show, but like we'd also love if you're new here and you just found us through this reread to listen along to our main show, which is out on every Friday, and to keep up to date with all the happenings of our podcast, you can follow us on Those Forking Fangirls on Instagram and Fork Fangirl Pod on Twitter, Those Forking Fangirls on TikTok. And
there's
also
a video version of the show on YouTube, Those Forking Fangirls.
Yes. So
what we talk about on the main show is like nerdy pop culture news every week. So we've got like book, TV, movie, and Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
We cover all of that. And then we do sometimes a fandom discussion, sometimes just like a discussion about how fandom integrates into our lives. You know, we're women in our late 20s, early 30s. So we talk a lot about, you know, how all of that meshes into our everyday life. So it's really fun. If you want to check out the main show, if you have fun with Chapter Chat, that is also in the feed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hope you guys enjoy.
And without further ado, we're going to let y'all enjoy chapters 1 through 14 of ACOTAR. All right. Chapter 1 of ACOTAR. The opening line. I want to talk about the opening line before we talk about anything else. The opening line is the forest had become a labyrinth of snow and ice. Now, this line has stuck in my mind. I don't know if it's because it's one of those first pages that I sat on for a long time rereading because I kept getting distracted, but I just remember so vividly the first time I read it and the image it created in my mind. I immediately just pictured Katniss in the woods in the snow. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what you thought when you read that. Is it memorable for you? Do you remember the first page?
It's
Do you remember what you were
not,
thinking?
It's not that. Opening lines are not memorable, like, unless they're used multiple times for me. But I think what is memorable is, not the first line, but definitely, like, the picture of her in the snow,
in the forest,
in the freezing cold, and like the fear that she
had.
The hunger. Because it's such a small amount of time that we are sitting with Feyre in this very terrible part of her life that we truly get like a full sense of how like awful her life is, and the people around her don't make it any better either.
You really feel how shit she feels, and I remember being irked by the hunger that she talks about. Like, it felt so vivid to me, and I just, if I read this opening line and I didn't know it was by Sarah J. Maas, I don't know if I would continue immediately, you know, if I opened up a fantasy book. But this is a classic fantasy opening line. I just don't think I gravitate toward opening lines in fantasies unless it's Percy Jackson. And he's like, hi, my name's Percy Jackson. He's like, breaks the fourth wall immediately, and I love it. But yeah, it's one of those. If I didn't know I was going to love it, I don't know if I'd continue immediately, but I knew I was going to love it because Sarah J. Maas stan.
I hadn't read Throne of Glass, and this was the first time I was introduced to Sarah J. Maas, and I just remember knowing that this was going to be a Beauty and the Beast retelling. Oh. And I was like, okay, I'm looking for all the pieces, and like they kind of start laying and then they quickly swerve.
I feel like the publishing company was pushing the idea that it was a Beauty and the Beast retelling, because it's really you know, taken apart from that. It's a loose interpretation. If anything, these first few chapters feel like a Beauty and the Beast Cinderella mashup almost, because her sisters are very evil stepsistery. They I just remember hating these assholes so much and being so confused by their behavior, because we open up on Feyre, everybody's starving, and the only reason they're alive is because Feyre is feeding them, and she's hunting, and she shoots this deer in the forest, and she shoots this wolf that's about to eat the deer because she needs that food, and the wolf looks like it might be a fae to her, and they're afraid of fae because they murder humans and pillage their towns and such. So she's like, I'm doing a favor to everyone if I murder this wolf, but also hopefully it's just a wolf because I don't want anyone to be mad at me for killing a fae. And she drags this deer carcass wrapped up in a wolf pelt home so she can sell the wolf pelt. And the first thing her sisters say to her is like, how long is it going to take you to make dinner? Like, and she's like, oh my God, I just walked miles in the freezing cold and hunted this food for you, and you can't make the stupid dinner, and then there's no wood for the fire. Mm-hmm. I just, like, as an oldest sibling, I just don't understand this behavior. Like, I couldn't comprehend that Nesta was such an asshole who didn't do anything. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't.
Like, there's this, like, ingrained need to take care of my siblings in me. I can't stand by and not do anything.
I couldn't like understand, because it's been 5 years since they've been in this situation where they've lost everything, right? Like, that's what the timeline they were talking about in the book.
I think it's actually 8 years, and it's been 5 years since 5 years since they've lost all their money, but 8 years since they lost their mom. I think.
So I feel like when I was reading this, I had gone, I mean, I'm similar. I've been through that situation where, like, I lost a parent, I lost my house, I lost everything. And you're going on 5 years now in this same situation, and you haven't become accustomed to this way of life. Like, it is...
They're holding on to it.
Like, so why? I just... And, like, during those times, at least, you know, there's... You can't do anything but survive. And I just, like, how much is Feyre doing to have them continue this mindset that she's going to do everything for them and they're not going to do anything for them? Like, honestly, like, she's perpetuating this state for them because she does love them so much.
By doing everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just... I don't understand how, in 5 years, like, you should become accustomed to this way of life. I don't get it.
Yeah. It was honestly nauseating to hear how they talk to her. And even Elaine, I was like, if I were Feyre, I would be giving Elaine a lecture about, like, how to do things and how she needs to help me. And the nerve of them being like, I need this money for a new cloak and I need it for boots. Meanwhile, Feyre's shit is falling apart and she's the one that's actually going out in the cold to hunt food for them. It just hurt me. It hurt me reading this. And then, so I forgot about Isaac Hale, long lost relative of Rosalie Hale. I do remember reading this and being like, oh my God, this is the Twilight reference. So if you forgot, Feyre is just tumbling around in the hay with a guy called Isaac Hale, who is now engaged to someone else, and he's her first love interest. He's just waiting in the wings to come out in book six when Rhysand inevitably new moons us for some reason or another. Yeah, I love the idea of him being like a secret sleeper love interest from the first chapter coming back in like the new Nesta series. Ugh, Nesta is so horrible in these first two chapters. Just so bad.
She is. The one thing I wanted to backtrack to in the first chapter was the mountain ash arrow. Does that ever come up, like, of like who gave that to her? Because I don't remember.
I feel like it does. The idea of mountain ash. So it's said very confusingly because it says that the arrow that she has that kills the Fae is carved from mountain ash and armed with an iron head. And she says that it was the ash wood in the arrow that made their immortal healing magic falter enough to make a killing blow. But she just said that it was carved from mountain ash. So is it mountain ash or ashwood trees? Like, which one is it? I was very confused. Is it trees or ash from the mountain that the trees were burned on or something? I don't know. I mean, it's obviously trees because then she goes on to talk about, like, the trees died off because the Fae, the High Fae burned them down and stuff. So maybe she's talking about a patch of trees. It is. I feel like this is a trope that comes up in a lot of fantasies where they need a kryptonite for
some sort of high powerful thing.
Yeah, they have a certain type of tree that can murder them.
Brooke says, I think the tree is called mountain ash and the wood from them is called ashwood.
That's weird. Like, why? Sarah, what were you thinking with these names? Very confusing. She just likes to make it complicated for us. You know, I thought it was interesting in the second chapter, Feyre talks about how a human has made these word marks around the threshold of the house to, quote, protect against Fae. But Feyre's like, humans can't do magic, so these are fake. And it's spelled W-A-R-D, word markings, in this book. But in Throne of Glass, word marks are such an enormous part of the story, and they're spelled W-Y-R-D marks. I think it's just interesting how Sarah separates the two worlds, but there are very similar words, but she, like, spells them differently, and it makes me think, you know, are these linked? Is this, like, we still don't know for sure how exactly the worlds are linked, but I feel like it's coming together more in her new adult series that is out, the Crescent City series. I feel like it's coming. We're going to see how everything's linked. I feel like some of the Fae from this world, from like the fire, the redheads, I feel like they're in the Crescent City world. I haven't finished the second book. Please don't spoil me. I'm now regretting bringing this up. Anyway, word marks are in both series. Just observing. Okay, Nesta also has a love interest, Tomas. I feel like this might come up in further books. She talks about Tomas. But
why do these humans even matter? Why are they coming back?
She thinks she's in love with Tomas. And when she said she was in love with him to Feyre, I just laughed. I was like, you are not in love with anyone except nothing. Elaine? I don't know. I feel like she doesn't have the capacity to love at this point in her life. She's so bitter and so mean and cruel. I mean, she does get redeemed. It takes a while, though.
True.
It takes a while. Feyre is bitter AF in this chapter. She's like, I don't know who's worse right now, Nesta or me. And, I mean, she's bitter with good reason. Nesta is just being an asshole.
She explains it, right? But I feel like there's nothing that can redeem her. Like, she just has to ask for forgiveness with the way that she treated
Nesta?
Feyre, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she eventually does, but it takes a very, 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 very long time.
Lots of steps.
Lots of fucking steps. Literal and figurative steps. Okay, before we end this segment, is there anything else you wanted to touch on in these first two chapters, Natasha?
I think we covered everything. I'm just, like, excited to be back in this world and relive this first book again, because I feel like at the end of it I was just so, like, emotional. I was like, I don't remember half of the stuff that went down, so it went by so quickly.
I didn't like Beauty and the Beast, and that kept, like, I don't know, making me separate from this story, and I couldn't connect to Tamlin, so I'm excited to reread it now with more perspective, because I did not understand why she liked Tamlin. Now it all makes sense. I mean, it makes sense why she didn't, why I didn't like Tamlin. But, yeah, I'm excited to keep going, and it ends on a very hopeless note where her father is trying to encourage Feyre to let Nesta live in this world where she's gonna marry this guy and have a great life, even though the guy doesn't have any money and Nesta thinks she's gonna be rich again. Mm-hmm. And it ends with Feyre just being like, there's no such thing as a better world. Even though she's about to go into a better world ish. Emphasis on the ish. We're going to be talking about chapters 3 and 4. Let's start with, obviously, chapter 3. Natasha, you didn't put any notes in here, so I don't know.
It's in my notes app. I just forgot to transfer them, so I have a lot of notes this time.
So we're going into the town square to sell the pelts that, in the last chapter, Feyre murdered the wolf and the deer, and she's about to sell the wolf pelt, which is actually a fairy's. On the way, the first thing that I noticed was the Children of the Blessed we encounter. Yeah. So these are, like, high fae worshiper fanatics, almost like a cult. It hit me as strange that we, as far as I remember, we don't see them again. And there's a lot of setup in this chapter that feels like foreshadowing, but then we don't really see any of it again. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of exposition about the world that made me think about Crescent City. Don't confirm or deny anything. Do you have any thoughts on these Children of the Blessed?
I feel like a lot of what they were saying was foreshadowing, at least. So I have, like, they said, may the immortal light shine upon these sisters. And I thought that was interesting. The Children of the Blessed were wearing silver bells. And I can't... Mm-hmm. The Fae don't like iron.
I don't really remember anything about silver.
Yeah.
I mean, was it supposed to call the Fae to them or something?
I think so. Did Feyre
kind of allude to?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, do we see the, like, silver later? I don't think it was a big point. So I'm like, okay, these Children of the Blessed don't have a lot of things right about the Fae.
Yeah. It's kind of like they don't know what they're worshiping, really. They're just kind of going off of myth and what they've heard from stories.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of exposition. There's a sentence that says, for millennia, we were slaves to the high fae. We built them temples to their feral gods and sprawling cities until the humans rebelled. And it just all sounds very familiar to the plot that we're seeing happen in Crescent City, which is different but similar, because there are fae and there are sprawling cities, and the humans are the lowest caste of society, and they are, I think, used as slaves in a lot of situations. Mm-hmm. And they are rebelling. That's what's happening. So I don't know exactly how these connect, but it is a very similar underarching story that's happening there. And it makes me think that, you know, if that world is this world, like, millennia ago, and if, you know, the other monsters and such have died off, and the Fae were, like, the over winning species in whatever war goes down, because we do have these creatures of great power in the ACOTAR series, like Amren and like the weaver and like the monster that we see in the library that are so powerful and we don't really understand them. It's interesting. It's all very interesting. And I don't want to be spoiled, so I don't want to like go into it deeply, but I couldn't help thinking about it. So another point I wanted to talk about was this mercenary that we get a lot of detail about this mercenary. And it makes us think that they're going to come back, and they never do. But she's like, somebody gave me money like this once when I needed it.
Yeah, in my mind, I put down, I'm like, oh, this is Gwendolyn Christie for some reason. Like, this is her.
It does feel like Gwendolyn
I'm like,
Christie.
She's just sitting there going to tell the story to Feyre. And I'm like, what is the point of this character aside from the fact of, like, giving her money and also, like, warning her of, like weird types of fae?
Of fae.
Like coming through the line.
Coming through the wall.
Yeah. And then that kind of puts us on a path of education that there's just more, there's more than one fae. It's like there's more different types of fae.
If you don't remember, this is the mercenary that buys the pelts from her and she overpays. And my thinking here was that she knew that that was a fae pelt. It sets it up like she comes back, she's going to come back around in some way. And so it got me thinking, like, is she a character from another universe that I'm just not putting together? But like, I racked my brain and no one really came to mind here. So I don't know.
I was like, is this Bryce? Doesn't make any sense.
Isaac Hale, he seems to be like the catch of the town, is the guy that Feyre is just like having a friends with benefits relationship with. He's the oldest son of the wealthiest farm family in the area. All these characters just kind of dissipate very quickly.
Yeah. I forgot someone was like Isaac Hale, that literally is the same name of Isaac in Teen Wolf.
Oh my god, really? I hated that character.
But that's the same name. Yeah, I thought it was interesting also, like, towards the end of chapter 4, who's Nesta marrying?
Nesta's not going to marry anybody, but Tomas is the person that she wanted to marry, but his dad beats his
wife.
That's
it. Okay, I was getting those two mixed up. But is Isaac marrying somebody? Like, that's what was talked about.
Yes,
in this.
But we don't know who it is.
Yeah,
he has a marriage being arranged for him.
I also thought it was interesting, like, the droughts that they take.
Oh yeah, the birth control
childproof.
The birth control like drinks that they make,
that they can
concoctions,
they can be taken by both men and women. I'm like, oh, how convenient.
That's nice. So in the next chapter, in chapter 4, is when Tamlin shows up in his big beast form and like knocks in the door, and he comes in just yelling about his dead friend, and he doesn't specify that his friend was in wolf form, and it's like, how were they supposed to know? And also, I wanted Feyre to be like, hey, we're starving to death, and he was about to eat the only food, and that is why I felt like I had to in order to live. Like, she didn't explain anything. It was him or her. Mm-hmm. And I wish she said something to that effect.
I mean, what can you do when you have a big, gigantic beast? Which, by the way, when I think of Tamlin, I think of, like, the beast from Beauty and the Beast. But it's more than that. Because he looks like a feline horse, which is what she said, with a wolf face, elk-like horns, and then black claws and fangs. And I'm like,
he's a very weird mashup of different animals.
Terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of beast-like because the beast does have horns.
Yeah, it's true. And he
has a lion-ish look, which is feline.
Mm-hmm. And then the wolf face, which I guess is like the beast. Her father comes forward, like limps on forward to try to come in between Feyre and the beast, which I thought was like, oh, yay, someone cares about Feyre.
But did he? He was almost like, go. I feel like
that's true.
He didn't say much. He like started to say something. He was like, my youngest. And then it was just, that was it. That was his attempt. He was like, bye. Yeah. Never mind. Don't kill me.
And like at that time, like the Feyre's only concern was her family. Like she still put herself in front of her family. Well, the other.
Yeah, she had her knives.
Yeah, well, they just like willingly cowered and Nesta like protected Elaine and
she was ready to fight. Like she had her knives and she was like, okay, his neck looks like the best place for this to land.
What did you think when her father was like, you're too good and to never come back?
I like that he said that. I think he doesn't want her to have to live this life where she's doing everything for them. And as long as she's there, it seems like they're going to be taking advantage of it. He wants her to get out and do her own thing instead of living only for them, which is what she's doing. Like, so I understand the sentiment with perspective, but in the moment, I would have been so hurt if my parents said that to me.
Oh, for sure.
We end the chapter with Tamlin taking Feyre. Chapter 5. So in this chapter, Feyre is being lugged to Perinthian on Tamlin's horse. And we're starting a new little rating system here where we're gonna every chapter be like, that was interesting, I loved it, or next chapter. So for this one, I'm gonna rate it next chapter. It was kind of just there. Yeah, I mean, we needed to get her to Perinthian, and
It was a little bit of like a world building chapter as well.
Yes, I feel like the first few chapters have really just been building the world of the humans, and because we need to know how they visualize, like what they think of the Fae before she goes in there, to understand her mindset. And yeah, on the way there, she's just like looking for ash trees. Like she's gonna be able to hop off the horse and freaking cut down a tree to make a new arrow. Come on, Feyre. And then she tries to talk to Tamlin and he just knocks her out, shuts her up with his magic, which I was like, Bish, really? She just asked you what your name was. Like, come on. Like, yes, she was thinking about murdering him with her knife, but like, can he read her mind? I don't understand that. It was like as she was thinking that he knocked her out, which is like so annoying, because how did he know that? He doesn't read minds.
Well, because obviously didn't want her to know the way through, but like, did he have to knock her out 2 days before they had reached the wall? I don't know.
Yeah, no. So annoying. I hate him already. Then, moving on, she was asleep for 2 days and she wakes up in chapter 6.
On a horse.
And she's not bound anymore by his magic. And magic tastes like metal. That was an interesting tidbit that I didn't remember. So it tastes like blood and dirty quarters. Ew.
I love that we like know what quarters taste like, because we definitely put them in our mouths when we were children.
You definitely at one point accidentally tried a quarter. But what would you rate chapter 6, Natasha?
Next chapter.
Chapter 6.
Oh, chapter 6? Oh, no, 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 no. Chapter 6 was interesting.
Yeah, chapter 6 is interesting. It's a mid-tier. Like, I was taking in a lot. Do you want to walk us a little through this chapter?
Well, yeah. The thing about this chapter is that this is the first time that gets revealed that like everyone's wearing masks, and I don't know why this isn't a bigger deal than it is. And she's just like, I guess this is just a fashion statement, a trend. And, like, even
well,
like
she doesn't
the servants,
know anything about it.
I know, but it's like I just realized how ridiculous it is that these people are wearing masks for the entire novel. And you can't take them off.
Seeing it now, it was like very weird. I'm like, oh yeah, they're wearing the masks in this book. It's the first time we see Tamlin in his human form. And I decided to picture him as Chris Hemsworth because he feels like Moody first movie Thor.
Oh, that's smart. I mean, I honestly, every time I think of Tamlin, I feel like it's a morph of Sam Heughan from Outlander, and then like actual like beast in human form. So like with like the long red hair, and he's like big and bulky.
But he doesn't have red hair; he has golden hair.
Yeah, I know that.
You can make Sam Heughan Lucien.
No, no, no. He's not Lucien in my head. He's Mr. Smith from Matrix, because he looks like Elrond from Lord of the Rings in my head, because he has the long red hair.
I decided to picture him as Bill Weasley, because Bill Weasley plays everyone and everything now.
That's smart. That's a good one. Oh, I might change my mind about that.
Yeah, because Lucy's kind of annoying. So
yeah, he is.
It works. And Bill so is annoying.
So this is like the first time that we're entering the Spring Court. And I just love how like Feyre was so astonished by like how much magic is being used to keep that land in one season. And and how like how she must feel just being so cold and with her family and trying to keep them warm and knowing that just on the other side of the wall there's a land Summer. Where you don't have to ever feel that way.
She gets off the horse and she hasn't fucking eaten in 2 days and she's so disoriented. And they walk her right into this dining room where Tamlin's just sat down and become a human and said nothing. And she has heard all the tales, like, never eat fey food. Just, like mm-hmm. in the Shadowhunter novels, never touch anything fey give you. They're horrifying. Yes. And that was, like, my first thought when I read this, too, because obviously I was already deeply entrenched in the Shadowhunter world. Uh-huh. But now I'm reading, I'm like, just eat.
Obviously it's fine.
Yeah, like you're starving, please. But Tamlin's like the least welcoming person, and then Lucien's a big jerk too, so I can understand being very afraid.
I don't know, I just like just knowing like how like everything ends, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me why they're acting this way. And because like they need her and it's they're being
very exactly terrible he's like, about it. She's never even gonna talk to you, and he's like, shut up. And it's just like, can you, if you were just nice to her, maybe this would be an easier process. But you've been a complete douchebag up until this point. Like, and I know that like their friend died, but again, the way that you've treated humans, like the history between the two species, it should be understandable that your friend that went into enemy territory accidentally got killed. And, like, you brought her back. I mean, if you're just going to be mad at her, I'm just confused about the whole thing. They need her for the curse. Like, we learn very soon that, like, they're cursed and they need him to fall in love with somebody.
Obviously, this is a Beauty and the Beast retelling.
Yeah, it's very different, but, like, that baseline is there. And so we see Lucien for the first time. I forgot that he's missing an eye. I forgot that he had a scar down his face. I
totally forgot that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That also kind of lines up with Bill Weasley. He's a courtier. I looked up the definition of a courtier because I never really looked that up. And it's a person who attends a royal court as a companion or advisor to the king or queen. So like he's his advisor. Yes. And he's an emissary. So he's sent on different missions for diplomatic reasons for Tamlin. And we learn what Feyre looks like, and I realize that I've been picturing Feyre wrong for ages, because I always picture her with, like, brown goldish, like, a golden brown hair. But he says, your eyes are like stars, and your hair is like burnished gold, which I guess could be, like, a brown, like, a bronzy gold.
Yeah.
But
I had
blonder.
Yeah, I had always pictured her as Jessica from...
Oh, from True Blood?
True Blood, yes. But I was reading this when Daredevil was out, so her hair wasn't as red. It was more of like that, like, that strawberry blonde.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's who I had always pictured.
J-Law is who popped into my head, Jennifer Lawrence, when I heard that description. I was like, I like her as Feyre. I think she's a fun Feyre. I think she'd actually make a great Feyre. The more in further we go into the books, like Florence is a little too intense for me, because I feel like Feyre has some
Florence Pugh
humor. I mean, Florence would be great in it too, but like Florence, I feel like I want her as a different role. Like, I feel like she'd be great as even Nesta. Yeah. Yeah. And, okay, we also have our first mention of the holy bathtub, the cauldron. And Lucien says, this is the hand the cauldron dealt us, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, ah, cauldron. There you are. There you are. You who haven't finished it yet, like, the cauldron, like, created their universe. And it looks like a giant bathtub. So I've called it the bathtub in all my book talks because
yeah,
it's a bathtub that created their world.
So much of like the backstory of ACOTAR is just like kind of glossed over. Like we don't really know much about like the treaty. Like we know some bits about the treaty. We know about like these ancient worlds and like the different kings and queens on
characters.
Yeah, it's more about the characters, and but yeah, so like we literally get like one chapter of like that world building, and I'm trying to pick it apart because there's so much that happens and like there's so much more that could happen, and she really doesn't give us a lot in the beginning because it's just mostly about Feyre and Tamlin at this point.
You learn as you go. Like I yeah. like the way she puts it, and so it's not overwhelming with the exposition mm-hmm. and backstory, but you get a lot more in Akamath, the next book, and Echo War. Like definitely way more backstory there. But yeah, and then I mean, she has to get dressed, and her Aelys is her assigned maid, it seems like. And Aelys is like, "Here's a dress."
Alice.
And she's like, it's Alice.
Yeah, not Aelys? It is. Uh huh.
It's spelled A L I S.
I did. That's what they're saying in the audiobook.
Oh my god. And anyway, she gives her a dress, she's like, "Here," and she's like, "I refuse to wear a dress," and so she eventually gets her a tunic and some pants, which I was happy that she eventually got her outfit of choice.
I love how she's like, "Bring me back my clothes," and then like she goes to do a nice gesture, wants to wash them, and then is like, "You want these rags, really? The holes in the armpits?"
Yeah, they like fell apart in the wash.
I mean, I get it. It's like if it's the only thing that you have left, because also like Tamlin took her knife. Yeah, she's like she all nothing. Freaked out about the like the claws that are, she's like, "I don't what his claws like came in. I don't know, you know."
Yeah, because when she was asleep, it was when she was knocked out that he took her knife. So
yeah,
it's kind of sketchy. Like, how did he get it? He had to paw around her clothes.
Well, and then the thing is, we get this chapter, not the chapter, the part where they're like, they're walking away from the table, and Alice and Feyre can hear exactly what Lucien and Tamlin are talking about. And it's like, you guys, can you just wait a second to like talk about, because like now it seems. The way that Tamlin...
What were they saying? Lucien,
they were talking... I'm trying to... What exactly were they saying? They were talking about, like who she is and how she's going to help them. And, like, kind of giving us a clue that there might be something more to the fact that... the fact that why Tamlin actually took her. And... Mm-hmm. So that was
why Andrus was there in the first place. I think Andrus was there to find a girl.
Yeah,
and she got to him first.
Yeah,
but he obviously underestimated humans and the fact that he should watch his back when he's in wolf form in the forest. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was chapter 6. I think we ended after she got dressed and maybe she came downstairs or something. I think she's gonna eat in the next chapter.
Chapter 7 this week. This chapter opens up with Feyre finally eating, and Tamlin's like, "Oh, you look better than before. Your hair is clean."
This is a very sad attempt at flattery.
It's the saddest attempt ever. And the saddest thing about it is, like, later in the chapter, Feyre's like questioning her confidence because she's like, "Wow, he couldn't find one thing to compliment about me. What does that mean?" It was really sad.
No, I just love when Lucien's just like egging him on. Not egging him on. He's like head nodding him. He's like, "Yeah, that's good. Keep going." And it was not. It was really bad.
Well, didn't he say something like, "You've lost your charm with women" or something too? He did rib him a little bit for that comment.
That's true, he did.
But Lucien's over there like, "Why don't you want to look at us? We're probably so much better than humans to look at." I'm like, "Ew, Lucien. Shut up. You're so annoying."
I love how he goes like, he's like, "And this..." And he just, like, gestures to himself.
Like, this is much better than what you usually get to look at. Because Feyre is trying her best, like, not to interact with them at all. Mm-hmm. And I think she's thinking about killing them. And then Tamlin's like, stop thinking about that. Invisible hands push her back into her chair and force her to eat her food.
I just love how she's trying so hard not to eat. And then Tamlin just is like, here, eat this. He's like, you should be thankful. Like, high fae don't serve other people. Yeah.
He's like, it's an honor to be served by me. And she's like, sit down, please. I'll get my own food. Tamlin's so, like, he's just so unself-aware of how dumb he's coming off in all of these interactions, I feel like.
I love how in my wrap-up for this chapter, I'm like, Feyre joins Tamlin and Lucien for a meal, and they have a chat. That's chapter 8 or 7.
I mean, there's a little bit more there, though. Like, so she eats, she shoves her face and, like, eats as much as she can. And then Tamlin makes the food disappear. And he's like, if you add one more bite, you'd throw up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you know?
Let her have her chocolate.
Does his powers, I know. Does his power extend to knowing exactly how much she can eat? Rude. It's that, like, I know best overprotectiveness that, like, when Edward does it, we're like, oh my god, he's so hot. When Tamlin does it, I'm like, ew, bitch, step off.
I think that's because Feyre is just so, like, strong-willed. I mean, I guess you could say the same thing for Bella, but, like, I think Feyre is, like, more strong-willed, and because she's the one who's, like, the caretaker. I mean, you could say the same thing for Bella.
She knows herself better.
I don't know.
Yeah, Bella is the yeah, you know, they both know themselves. No, it's just, like, different phases of our life that we read these in. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to. Like, Bella feels like a teenager, and we were teenagers, and that's how we thought back then. And then we have a little bit more agency as we get into our 20s, and we're reading this in our early 20s, and Feyre also feels like she has a little bit more agency, because she, like, murders people, and, like, Bella, she, like, cooks food. So it's, like, a step up from the cooking. In the, like, Bella's the master of her kitchen, and Feyre's, like, goes out into the jungle to get the stuff for the kitchen. Like, it's a new level. A new level of fierceness. I mean, and no knock to Bella. Like, my favorite joke in the book is, like, when she's like, watch me hunt. She gets her cereal.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Yes, bitch, hunt. But yeah, so Feyre has, like, this new level of agency, and we're just, like, a little older reading this, and we're seeing, I think, the annoying aspects of the overprotective male alpha more clearly in a new light.
We learn when she's at the meal that she's so worried about her family, she wants to get back to her family, and Tamlin he's like, they're being taken care of, like, you don't need to worry about them. And then she's just like, oh, yes. Okay, cool. Like, you would think I would take their only source of sustenance and not, you know, provide for them. And that's all.
She's like, I don't know. Yeah, she's like, I don't know, why would you provide for them?
And I think, like, then when she goes back up to her room, what does she do?
She takes the curtains and makes, like, a little trap out of them. Like, that's going to stop someone from coming into her room. And poor Alice is like, or Alice, her, like, lady
in waiting
maid. I don't know. Yeah, I gets stuck in her stupid curtains trap. Alice is not amused. She's like, you know, we could kill you, and I'm only not doing anything on my master's orders or something. She doesn't seem like the warmest.
Mm-mm. And also, like, when she's back at her room, I thought it was interesting how she's again thinking about her family, and, like, this is before, like, Alice, like, gets trapped in her booby traps, and she's like, well, if I come back, like, through the wall and I disrupt their new way of life, you know, they're probably all going to be mad at me. So it's like, the best thing, she's like, the best thing for them is the fact that I ended up leaving.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, Tamlin, so he says that if she tries to escape and go through the wall, then he will stop providing for them. Mm-hmm. So basically, she has to stay here or her family will go back into poverty and not be able to eat. So
yeah,
that's the way to make her stay. He realizes, I feel like, that that's his leverage at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But she asks, she's like, why were you even out there? Oh, yeah. Wait, that's coming up. That's coming up here. All right. So she gets a new tunic. It's so purple. So a purple so dark, it's almost black. And she wishes she knew the name of the color. Do you know the name of the color? Is it like indigo? Because I thought that was a dark blue.
Indigo is like more like a dark blue. Yeah. So dark that it's black. I don't know. I mean, I guess indigo would probably be the closest name for it.
The best name. Yeah.
Dark purple.
She looks at the paintings and she's like, wow, this place is actually like peaceful. Maybe my dad was right when he was like, never come back.
Oh, sorry. Backtracking, because I love how he asked, they're like, oh, like, when am I supposed to do with my life? He's like, I don't care what you do with your life. Do you have any hobbies? And she answers, no. And he's like, Lucian's like, oh, that's just so like humans.
I'm like, yeah, human. They have no hobbies.
I'm sorry. Most humans aren't living in lavish luxury with all time warm, like sunny weather like you are.
Like, they don't have the luxury of having hobbies at the moment because they're just trying to survive in the life you provided.
Understand your privilege, sir.
Check your privilege at the door, Lucian. Lucian comes off so privileged in this chapter. He's just like so unaware of himself in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, she's looking at these paintings, and I feel like in another chapter we hear that Tamlin was watching her look at the paintings, and that's why he buys her paints, perhaps. Not sure.
Book says that the fact that Tamlin expects Feyre to believe her literal kidnapper will provide for her family. She does. She believes it right off the bat.
Well, no, she's like, they kind of argue for a second, and then she's like, oh, I guess I'll have to believe it. You know, it's kind of like, what else does she believe? How does she make peace with the fact that she's not going to be able to provide for them? But yeah, I know. Tamlin always does things like that. He expects her to just like trust him. And it's like, you kidnapped me and knocked me out for days to bring me here. And now I have to live in Perinthian, or you will take away what's the support you've offered to my family. Like, he's not taking into consideration the bad things he's doing. He's just like, look, I'm doing good things. Like, that's why you should trust me. Dadoy. Like, so anyway, she goes into the garden and she's like looking at the flowers, and he comes to the door and he's like in the shadows and he's like, do you want a tour? No, first he says, you. And it's like, don't you know her name? And he does know her name, and she's like, wow, what, did he forget it already? Which obviously he didn't. So it's like, why do you feel the need to stand in the doorway in the darkness and yell you? And then he's like, do you want a tour? And she's like, no. And he's like, well, I want to give you a tour. And he just like doesn't know what no means, and it's another like red flag for Tamlin for me.
I love the fact that he tries to grin at her, and she's like, and he opens up his mouth, and I think that's a grin. I don't know. Okay, I'm just getting, like, in this chapter, it's just such Beast vibes. Like, this is like exactly what the Beast does to Belle.
Yeah. This is his like most Beast-like, and it's like, you still interact with like human like people. I think you still know how to speak to people. But this is when we learn the backstory. Like, she finally asks, like, why were you in the human realms? I don't remember why he was in there. I thought that they were gonna say to get a girl for him to fall in love with. That's why, right? But he says
he can't share that
because
with
of
her,
the magical blight. Yes, of course. But I forgot about the magical blight that's kind of smothering all their powers.
Yep, I forgot about that too.
Aramanthia's like spell or something. I don't remember the exact parameters of this curse, but it's all hinging on Tamlin. Like, the, now looking at it, I'm kind of like not understand. I guess we'll have to wait till the end of the book for when it's explained. But I'm like, why does this hinge on Tamlin's ability to fall in love? I have no idea.
I don't, yeah.
So the curse has been going on for 50 years. The masks have been stuck on for 50 years. I don't know if the curse happened at, like, the spring ceremony. Like, is I don't remember.
What I don't think it actually... Yeah, talk about a curse, or does he just talk about a magical blight?
I feel like he says something like a magical blight has cursed these lands and it's spreading. Yeah,
so she doesn't know that it's a curse. And then the guy that she killed across the wall was looking for a cure, and so that's because he wasn't there, as she knows right now. He wasn't there, but he explains why the wolf or the fairy that she killed was across the wall, because he was looking for a cure.
Yeah,
and why the masks are adhered to their faces.
Yeah. And that's basically this chapter. So a lot happens compared to all the other chapters we've read so far. Chapter A of ACOTAR. Natasha, on our scale of rating the chapters, is this a next chapter interesting or amazing?
Next chapter.
Yeah, it's definitely a next chapter.
Not a lot that happens in this chapter.
It's really a nothing chapter. After, like, a really big chapter, there's nothing.
The summary of it is that basically, like, Feyre plans her escape. But it's, I feel like in the last chapter, she'd already come to the conclusion that going back with
that she can't.
That she can't. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I know. I was just like, can you stop? It's getting old. The thing is, she spends the whole chapter kind of like pontificating on how she could possibly escape and looking at hiding spots on the grounds and thinking about like Lucien vouching for her to leave. And I'm just sitting here like, what in the world? In what world is Lucien gonna vouch for you to leave? He's even more annoying than I remember.
Yeah. He's really bad.
It's all coming back to me why I didn't love this first book. Because every character is annoying, even Feyre. Feyre is so uptight right now and anxious that we don't even get a sense of her actual personality yet. So it's just annoying Tamlin, annoying Lucien, her annoying family, and Feyre talking about the same thing over and over again. She does have this moment outside where she feels something watching her. And I fucking hate this moment too, because it gives me the heebie-jeebies. I hate when they feel things and then they don't immediately know what it is. And we just go back inside the house. And I'm assuming...
I just think it's so funny, though. She's, like, outside in the gardens, like, looking for, like, places to hide if she needs to. And then, is she hiding in this scene or is she just, like, standing there? No, I feel like she's just hiding.
Standing there. No, I think she's just looking around. She's, exploring the grounds.
I thought she was, like, getting herself in, like, a hiding place. And then, Alice is calling for lunch. And she's, like, hiding.
No, I think she was like, this would be a good hiding spot, but like not actually hiding in the moment because that's suspicious and weird. But she, I'm assuming that's the surreal. Is that what that creepy thing is that she gets the wishes from later on in the book? Spoilers. There's like a weird being that she interacts with later on.
That's like in the, in the forest though.
No. That's something else. Are you talking about the Weaver?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No, there's a surreal in this one where she gets, like, wishes or something. I don't remember specifics. But also, there's other monsters in this forest. I don't like all the, like, unknowns in this book that really don't matter. That's another thing. This feels annoying because we know that she never ends up wanting to escape, really. I mean, you could say maybe in book 3 she does something escapey, but it's not what she's prepping for now, you know?
No. But she does go out into the forest when he tells her not to. And that's what kind of,
endears him to her, I think.
I don't know. I just remember being annoyed a lot of the time in this book. Tamlin, in this chapter, actually notices all the calluses on her hands, and he just tells Lucien that Feyre likes to hunt. And Feyre goes, excuse me, bitch, I hunt out of necessity? I don't like to hunt. There's no liking.
It's because I have and to.
She, yeah, and she steals another freaking butter knife from the table and puts it in a bag in her closet. And I'm just like, you think they don't know that bag is there?
And there's a whole section where she's like, well, I guess I don't have to have every meal with them. That's good. But it just feels like the last chapter over again. Like, they're just having this,
it does,
like, very stuck up type of dinner. And Lucien's being an ass. And Tamlin also brings, he's like, hasn't your mother ever taught you this? And then she gets quiet. And then Tamlin's like, there were no findings of a older woman at your house. What happened to your mom? And then she goes into explaining how she died of typhus. at the age of eight. The thing is, like, she is so stuck up because, like, she shows a little emotion by telling him this, and, like, she actually does give him something. And I think it's funny that they share this moment because Tamlin's like, I'm very sorry for your loss. And then Lucien's like, looking back and forth at them, he's like, oh, there's a moment. And Feyre was like, I'm not going to let him see my pity. And then she's like, good night.
See my pity? Wait, what do you mean?
Like, she doesn't want him to pity her. And And so she doesn't really say, like, thank you. She just leaves.
Oh, yeah. She just leaves. Yeah, this could be easily edited, I feel like, into the past chapter. Like, they could have talked about this at the dinner table before. And we could have had the same things happen in the outside area. But, that's really, really it for this chapter. So, chapter 9 this week. Let's do it!
Christine, I have a confession.
Did you not read it?
I totally forgot to read this chapter.
I'll walk you through the synopsis because it's one of those next chapter chapters. Okay. So you got lucky. It's a lucky week for you here.
I feel Christine was like on a deadline and I was like, oh, I'll just listen to it tomorrow morning. And there was an explosion in my sink. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I listened to it right before the podcast episode because the deadline. So it's fresh in my mind. And it was just 20 minutes on the audiobook. So it was very quick. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. You didn't miss much. You can get back on the horse next week for chapter 10.
So hopefully something happens.
Hopefully something. I mean, stuff happens, but it's nothing big. So we're outside, she's exploring the grounds. Tamlin comes out and he's like, oh, would you like a tour? I'm off this morning. And she's like, no thanks. And he's like, are you sure? I don't have work, so I can show you around. You should come with me. And she's like, nah, sorry, bye. She continues on this track where she thinks she's gonna convince Lucien to convince Tamlin to loophole her out of her debt to them to stay in Perinthian for the rest of time, which we all know is a dumb plan and never happens. And she's walking around, she's like, that would make a great hiding spot, let's catalog these hiding spots. Does she ever use them? I don't know. And then she runs into Lucien and he's like, oh, I'm going for a hunt today, do you want to come? And she's like, oh, perfect, I'm gonna use this time to convince him to talk to Tamlin for me. And they're on this hunt and they're not shooting anything. And Lucien's like, so when are you gonna try to convince me to ask Tamlin to get you out of this whole ordeal and let you go? And she's like, oh, how does he know that that's what I was gonna do? And he's very snarky about the whole ordeal. He's like, there's no way you're getting out of this. I don't know why you ever thought that would work. And we all knew this already. He was already such an asshole. I was like, why did you ever think that that would work? And he tells her about what happened with the masks. Like, he kind of references it, and she's like, oh, I wasn't even thinking that I was making him reference that, but, like, let me try to get him to talk about it more so I learn more about this. And it was a ceremony in honor of Tamlin. They all wore the masks because he's a shapeshifter. Mm. And she's like, what happened? And he's like, hell was unleashed on us. And the less you know about it, the better. Like, you don't want to know about her. Like, references Aramantha for the first time, but doesn't say her name.
Yeah.
And we learn that Tamlin can shift people into different animals. Like, he has that ability. So
I forgot about that. She's
like, yeah, I didn't remember that either. So the reason the guy was a wolf is so because Tamlin turned him into a wolf so he wouldn't be seen as a fairy over there. People wouldn't know. And I'm sitting here like, what the fuck was he expecting to do as a wolf there? I just don't really understand. If he can't morph back into his other form, that feels like a really bad body to be stuck in, especially in a place that doesn't have any food and people are hunting in the forest. They really didn't think that through. Mm-hmm. And I thought that we learned later on that he was there to bring back a girl to help break the curse. Like, but how was he ever going to do that in wolf form? Was he just going to grab her in his fucking jaws and drag her back? Like, I don't understand. Was he going to ever get on his back? Ride up like Jacob and Bella? I'm just... And Renesmee? I guess Renesmee rides up Jacob's back as a wolf. I don't know. So that kind of confused me. And I don't know. I can't remember the specifics. But we also learn about... Like, Lucien mentions that he's not a fairy that does this and not a fairy that does that. And one of the things he says, he's like, I'm not a fairy that you capture and I answer your questions for you. And that's what happens later on the book. She captures a Suriel, which is a fairy that will answer three questions. They have to answer them honestly. And I said that they grant them three wishes in another podcast. I was talking about this. I was like, she gets three wishes. No, she gets three questions answered.
It's not the genie.
It's not a genie. I got that wrong. And it ends with them in the forest on a cliffhanger. He's like, don't move. Do not react because there's a scary monster in the forest animal. I feel like it's like that invisible bogger thing. I don't remember the specifics, but I kind of have a vague memory of it being like something that shows you fears or something. I don't, or feeds on your fears. Mm-hmm. He's like, don't
feeds
react.
On the fear, then, rings a bell.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how the chapter ends. And I don't like Lucien. I'm bored by Feyre. I hate Tamlin. So I'm just like, let's keep it moving. Let's get to Agamemnon. I want to get to Agamemnon. Do you have any thoughts on this before I wrap us up today?
No, but thank you for the recap. I do have thoughts. I'm wondering, why are we still in a chapter with her like thinking about hiding spots? Like, I feel like she's been doing that.
I know. I'm like, shut the fuck up, Feyre. Move like, on.
This is repetitive. Let's move on from this.
I know she's building the world, you know, that, but I feel like we just don't use this world much. That's why, I mean, we do, I guess. But in the long run, the grand scheme of things, we don't, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. This first book kind of feels very separate to me from all the other books. It's the ground. It's like the small version of the world. And then we zoom out and there's so much more to it that we don't get in this first book. So,
yes.
So we read chapters 10 and 11. Two more next chapters for me. What were they rated for you? So we rate this on a system of either next chapter, interesting, or amazing chapter. Both were next chapters. I'm like, come on, let's go. What about you?
Yeah, I think they were next chapters. They were still exciting. And I'm like, oh, okay, wait,
things are happening. Maybe things are turning a little bit, yeah. But yeah.
Well, to summarize what happens, basically we meet the bog, which is it kind of conjures your biggest fears, I guess, if you look at it. It's kind of, I'm thinking Boggart, like from the Potter series.
Yeah.
And then it kills you, I guess. And she's on the hunt with Lucien when they come across it. And Lucien's like, don't look at it. Don't look at it. Don't look at it. It's going to watch you look at it. Don't look at it. So they don't look at it and it goes away. And then we then meet another monster called the Pooka. But before that, Feyre is up in her room. And out the window, she sees her dad and she's like, oh, my God, my dad's here to rescue me. First of all, I'm like, I don't know how your dad would possibly be here to rescue you. But OK, she goes downstairs. She goes outside. She's like walking towards her dad. And then Tamlin finds her and he's like, what are you doing? Are you trying to escape? And she's like, please, sir, my dad's here to save me. And then he's like, look again. And she looks and her dad is morphed into something else. And he's like, how could you be so foolish? Weren't you told to keep your wits about? Like, Tamlin is so mean and obnoxious about Feyre being tricked by a fairy that she's never heard of in a foreign land that she doesn't even know that this is a thing that she needs to look out for. Like, her dad might be, I don't know, a hallucination. What were your thoughts on this?
I mean, both were terrifying. I was listening to it while I was taking a shower. So, I just, like, the Pooka scene, I was just like, girl, you're so dumb. Come on. How is your crippled dad, like, you've been there for, like, 2 days now. How has he found exactly where you are? Like, girl, use your head.
But then also, Tamlin's really rude about it. So I'm just like, both of you reacting in annoying ways here. All these extremes.
Yes.
And there's also a scene where I think Feyre has a dream that she's murdering Andre, who is the wolf that she killed, except she's murdering him as a actual fairy form, and she feels really guilty about it. And that's all that kind of happens. Yes. I feel like this is the thing. I feel like we're introduced to these monsters to never really interact with them again, right? And that's why I'm just like, come on, come on. She interacts with the surreal. And we do talk about the surreal one more time. She's just like, was that a surreal? And they're like, no.
No. It just adds to, like, Tamlin's douchebaggery. Because
yes.
He was so upset that she and Lucien went on a hunt together.
Oh, my God.
She told him she wanted to be alone.
I know.
I'm hurt.
He's just like really butt her at the kitchen table or at the dining table where they're eating. It's just like, can you just take a breath? But
yeah,
that's really it. Like, we're not at the juice of the story. I really don't feel like we get to the juice of what makes this series the series until we go under the mountain. Like, until then.
Truly.
Until yes. Then, it's kind of just like,
it's a lot of just building.
Building and stuff that's not really going to carry on. That's basically that's the next two chapters, 10 and 11. So what do you rate these chapters? I'm going to give them both an interesting. I think they're finally starting to capture my attention.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I really wanted to read the next chapter.
Yeah, I was just, this is the first time that I was just like ready to let it roll instead of just being like, oh, I finished the chapter, pause. Which is nice. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah. It's going to get harder as we keep going.
It is. We might have to do like three chapters. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, we start off with Tamlin coming in from trying to, delete the bog. He goes to kill the bog and he's a little bloodied up. Feyre is like, oh, you're hurt. It's the typical, like, you're wounded. I'm going to patch you up. Let me help you. And Tamlin is very like, fine. How do you know how to do this? He's always like, how do you know how to do anything? You're just a human. You should know nothing. I don't remember like how he notices that she doesn't know how to write. He's like, you don't know how to write, do you? How do you know how to do anything else?
Because he looks at the map that she drops, and then she's just making like little marks. She's not writing words of where things are.
So you know that some people, like, this is like a thing that like turns them on in a relationship, is like helping the man or helping the person who's sick get better. And I feel like that's what's happening with Feyre. She's like warming and softening to him because she's like seeing him wounded.
Yeah, she's definitely like endearing herself to him. I totally forgot that Feyre couldn't like read or write.
Me too.
I went right over my head, but I think that's a huge thing later in the second book.
Yeah, I think, like, she learns to read and write with the people at the Night Court, I'm thinking.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Feyre wants to write a letter to her family, but she doesn't know how to write very well at all. And so she's on a quest to teach herself it in the study. And when Tamlin asks if he can help her, and he asks in a very, like, Tamlin, like, do you want help? Like, and she's like, no, this is humiliating. Are you just going to, like, make fun of me? And he's like, why would I make fun of you? You think I have time? I spend my time making fun of you. I have better things to do. Like, basically what he said. It's so stupid.
He's so terrible. It's just like they're so contentious to each other. And like, I just feel like I was just reading another chapter where they were fighting again. Like, even when they had a little bit of like quality time, it was just like Tamlin just says all the wrong things.
Yeah. For the first time, he like actually smiles, though.
Yeah. And he's like, you're not what I expected. What do you mean? What does that even mean?
Yeah, I know. She like overhears them having a cryptic conversation about the curse. Like, Lucien's mad because he's running out of time, and he says, you're not even trying.
Yeah, I know. I wrote down, Lucien gets angry at Tamlin again and wants him to do something that the reader doesn't understand yet.
No, it's like, this is going on for too long. Get to it. Tell us. Okay, so then this is my favorite part of the two chapters. Feyre goes to look at the art, and she finds this mural that basically explains the entire creation of their world. And there's a cauldron that has poured over with like starlight, it sounds like, that like created this world. And there's all these different panels of their different wars that we kind of move through, and the cauldron created the world, but like whatever was in the cauldron got poured out by somebody, is what it sounds like. It sounds like there is like a god, and it's not just the cauldron that has feelings, you know. They say like cauldron blessed, but who's controlling the cauldron is what I'm asking now, because it was poured. Unless that was just like a metaphor for the cauldron being a sentient bathtub.
I thought it was interesting because she also sees the map. So the mural, and then there's the map, right?
Yes, there's a map of just one thing. There's a map of Perinthian too, I think.
I was thinking about this because I'm listening to it, and it's funny how much I have that map memorized in my head, and it's probably one of the only it's probably one of the only like literary maps, maybe besides Middle Earth, that I can see in my head, of like where everything is. I don't know, I know like the bottom and the top, and then some of the middle is like,
but I remember like
the island.
Yeah, because it looks like the UK in Europe. So that's why it was really easy to remember it. Like, I remember glancing at it, and I'm like, oh, this just looks like the United Kingdom. So it's easy to remember. But what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. the maps. She finds where she lives on the map, which is kind of grounding for her. And then we get to see where all the courts are for the first time. And I remember like brushing by this really quickly the first time I read it. And now I was like, okay, let me get my notebook and my microscope and write down all these little details. I didn't, but I paid very close attention.
I thought it was funny. Feyre says that she learned the lay of the land and vows to never go up north.
Yeah, and then she's like, next book, let's go up north. There was also, okay, so Feyre is talking to Lucien, and Lucien takes this as a compliment that she says that at least Lucien is just being exactly who he is, which is like an arrogant douchebag and a lot of the time. But Lucien's like, oh, so you caused another fight between Tanlin and I because it isn't like that you like me better than him, basically, that you'll talk to me. And she asks him if she was like hypothetically going to catch like a hypothetical cereal, hypothetically, how would I do it? And he's like, well, hypothetically, like go to this part of the forest and go near running water at Double Snare and find some chickens. And hypothetically, I might be out there to hear you if you scream. So hypothetically, do it at this time.
And then I love this. Oh, I just thought it was so funny how, well, one, I was a bit like scandalized that she went and found his bedroom. I'm like, like me with my, you know, period drama knowledge. I'm like, that is just so uncouth. And and then I'm like, Tamlin's not gonna like this. And then he's just like, come in, human. He's definitely more likable now than he was.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it's weird because I remember him as being likable, and now rereading it, I'm like, he's so annoying. Like, as compared to Tamlin, I guess he's the likable one, and that's why we latch on to him as being likable. But the fact that, I don't know, he's even telling Feyre to do this surreal thing, I feel like it's like morbid curiosity if she can do it and not die, because this is very dangerous. And he's just like, yeah, go for it. Let me tell you how.
What secrets is she trying to get from the surreal? I don't remember.
You know, I feel like maybe it has to do with like what's going on with the curse. I have no idea either. I don't remember. Honestly, in hindsight, I feel like all of this means nothing. Like, I'm still like in that mind view. I'm like, I don't really like the first book in the Akatar series. It's one of those series where I'm like, I like the second book onward. And I kept reading because I knew I love Sarah's writing, so I know it's going to get really good. But all of this stuff doesn't matter. Like, the surreal in the long run, I don't think it mattered because you can't remember it. So it didn't matter. Right? Like, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, you just have to get to the end of the book, and then you're in like another phase of, or another.
It's like a whole
different story.
World. Yeah, it feels completely different. And it's so much more exciting because there's like so much more likable characters, and you kind of now feel like you're getting to know Feyre and who she really is when she's not in fight or flight. And she's in fight or flight for like this entire book.
That's very true.
And she says, she says this line that I just thought was like hilariously dumb. This, when Lucien's worried about Tamlin finding out that he told her how to catch a surreal, and she's like, well, good thing I have superior abilities to keep my mouth shut. And he's like, oh, I think I like you.
The thing is, like, that is a superior ability, because I can tell you right now, I am holding a lot of secrets from a lot of my friends, and it is extremely hard to not tell you or other people all these fucking secrets that I have, and I hate it. And I'm learning, okay? Because usually I'll just run to my other best friend and I'll tell them. I have to be a vault. Can't say anything.
Now you just told us you have all these secrets.
Yeah, well, you're not gonna get them from me because I've already decided you're not gonna know.
All right. But yeah, I mean, I understand that it is hard to keep secrets. Like, I have the same like and you have like this itch that you need to talk about it, but it's just like a stupid line. Like, she sounds so corny when she says it. Like, good thing I have the superior ability to keep my mouth shut. But I think that is the end of those two chapters. It's kind of where we leave off. She's going to catch the serial next time. So things are about to get wild up in here.